The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Does the First Amendment protect hate speech? That is what U.S. college students were asked last month in a nationwide study to gauge their understanding of the First Amendment. Is hate speech covered? The results are not exactly encouraging. 44% of college students say, nope, it's not. Nearly half. Hate speech is not covered and protected under the First Amendment. 16% said, I don't really know. In hopes that some of these students may be listening, the correct answer is, unfortunately, yes, the First Amendment does protect what society deems hate speech. You might find the speech totally disgusting, totally revolting, absolutely wrong, but hate speech is indeed protected by our Constitution. And if you don't understand why the protection of the worst kind of speech is absolutely vital, then we need a ton of remedial education, and I think we do. If there is a speaker on campus that students consider offensive, 51% said it's okay for the student group to shout over the audience, shout over the speaker so the audience can't hear him. 51%. Even worse, 19% of college students said it's okay to use violence to keep a controversial speaker from speaking on campus. 19%. This has to have both Antifa and neo-Nazis salivating. Students and Americans, here's another constitutional right you may not know about. You have the right to not listen to speakers that offend you. This advice is especially handy for Berkeley students next week during their free speech week. Stay home, read a book, hang out with friends, go to a concert, study at a library, have your own speech someplace, whatever. Just don't cave into the lie that you must physically restrain anyone who offends you. There is no such thing as a safe zone. If there is a safe zone, then no one is ever safe. Because the minute that 51% of society says, you know what, I don't like your speech, you're not safe. The study shows that we have out of control progressivism. We have out of control Marxism. It's easy to mock. It's easy to blame. It's easy to point fingers. But now what do we do about it? How do you fix such ignorance? Well, the first thing we do is stop mocking each other. Start trying to find ways to talk to one another, to have actual conversations. And I'm not talking about the 20% that are the Nazis or the Marxist revolutionaries. I'm talking about the 80%. The 80% of the American people who don't want to live this way, who can listen to their neighbor and roll their eyes and be like, okay, we got a crazy neighbor. But they will still help their neighbor. They will still love their neighbor. The way to do this is we have to make sure that our own house is in order first. First of all, parents, you cannot assume that your children are learning the Constitution at school because they are not. And if we don't pass the torch on the basic American freedoms in our own home, you can be sure most schools and universities are not going to get the job done.
It's Thursday, September 21st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
2 more days till the end of the world. Just counting down.
No.
And actually, I don't think that's what the guy who he came up with a theory of September 23rd is actually even saying. Jason is our head researcher, and this has been going on as a joke between all of us until yesterday, because I said, you know what, Jason, would you just do the research and tell me exactly what people who believe this, the organizers, what they actually believe? Do they believe that we're going through some sort of a portal or a threshold, that we're crossing a point that is pointed out in the book of Revelation? Or are they saying the end of the world is coming?
I got to say, I did not want to look into this when we first brought this up. I was hoping that maybe you'd forget about it.
No, I don't do that usually.
I was kind of hoping. And so I went home that night and I saw this documentary. And I was like, okay, fine. I was going to watch the first 5 minutes, but it was actually so beautifully shot. That actually drew me in more than anything else. But
listen to the litany of excuses we've received already. I know, in this conversation.
I know. He didn't want to do
it was only the cinematography that got him into it.
I'm only reading it for the article.
Right.
Not the pictures.
But I mean, as you know, we hear this all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like every other year. I mean, the last time I think it was like so much hysteria was probably that Aztec calendar thing.
Yes.
And we're just,
and then the Shemitah and the blood moons
and right. Harold Camping. If you remember him, he was the guy that put up all the advertisements on the trains and the subways in New York City saying it was like May 21st.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Mm. Yeah. That's right. Mm. That's right.
That was good. The world was going to end that day, too. And so, then they revised that one to September. And that one, it didn't happen either time, by the way. If as a historian, I remember this.
He just got his math wrong.
Okay. Yeah, that's what happened.
Okay. So you know, the guy who actually is the brain behind this, the what is he, a numerologist? The guy who's actually behind it, what's his name? David Mead. He is going to be joining us in about a half an hour, and he is going to explain, because I don't think that I've heard several versions, and let's go through what you found out in your research. But I've heard several versions. One, Jesus is coming. Two, it's the rapture. Three, the most reasonable I've heard is this is a sign, and it appears to be the sign in the book of Revelation that the times are coming, that this is the time that it's starting.
Yeah.
And that one I kind of could buy into. I'm not saying that I do, but I could at least say, well, that's worth looking into.
Well, I wasn't giving it any credit at all just hearing it on the surface. But when I watched that documentary, I was like, okay, maybe crap.
this is the story of every 9/11 conspiracy theorist right here.
Yes, at first, I thought it was Islamic extremism, but then I saw loose change on YouTube.
Well, it's like, as a Christian, you can see how this hysteria is building. Because the theory is, if you read Revelations 12, like actually, if you're at your Bible right now, flip to Revelation 12 and just see this really quick. Because in Revelation 12, it talks about a great sign in heaven. It talks about that a woman will be clothed in the sun, and that the moon will be at her feet, and in her womb or on her head will be a crown of 12 stars. And then she will be appearing. She'll be in labor. She will be with child, and she will be in labor.
And it will be a labor. It will be a boy, right? A man child.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So you obviously have to see this as something that is, you know, you're there's not going to be a woman up in the sky. What is the woman? So, and how is she clothed with the sun? And what is the man child?
Okay. So. Hold on to your steering wheel if you're driving.
Yeah, all right, okay.
I'm just saying.
Well, do I let go of my Bible or my steering wheel? Which one do I?
So on September 23rd, this has never happened before. It will never happen again. That's the first alarming thing about this. But
did you get that from
the documentary?
Or did you get that from Nat? Did you check that stat out?
That appears to be true from what I can find out.
No, did you check it out? Okay. All right.
So there is. So Virgo will be in the sky on September 23rd. So that is the Virgin of Virgo, which they're saying is representative of Mary. Is what the people that believe in this are saying.
Okay.
So just on this day, usually Leo is right above Virgo, but there's 9 stars in Leo, but just on this day, Mercury, Mars, and Venus will look like stars, and they're in perfect alignment, and they form 12 stars right above her head.
So, to be clear, it's not 12 stars. It's 9 stars and 3 planets, but the 3 planets look like stars, so we're supposed to understand that that's the 12 stars.
So to be fair,
I'm understanding.
I can see this from both ways. I could go, yes, Stu is technically accurate. Those are 9 stars and 3 planets. However, when you're reading it, mm-hmm. you know, remember, Book of Revelation was written by John, who is seeing things, and then like, how do I describe what I'm seeing?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Who I don't even probably didn't even know the difference between stars and the other celestial bodies
at
the time.
Right, but at that point,
anyway,
yes.
Yeah. So
they didn't.
So there's that thing. That's one coincidence. So also at that time, we'll just follow through Revelation. She'll be cloaked in the sun. So the sun will be on her shoulder at that time, basically right where her garments are. So she's cloaked in the sun.
So it's a woman who's dressed only on the shoulder. I just want to make sure I understand. That means cloaked by the sun meant there would be a light at her shoulder. That was okay. Okay. No, I understand.
Yeah, that one's a little hard. Okay, go ahead.
It's like a little bit of a reach. Yeah. I'm just going to say it. It feels like a little bit of a reach.
Okay.
Okay.
But it's also,
we are talking about the end of the world in 2 days.
I know.
But the positioning is very coincidental. But it still is. So, okay. So that's the next thing.
Okay.
So the moon will be at her feet. Mm-hmm. So the moon in the sky is directly at Virgo's feet. So we have the sun, we have the crown, we have the moon all at her feet. Now, this is where I was chewing on my pen. I think I dropped it out of my mouth at this point. She will appear to be with child.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Jupiter, right? So Jupiter has been inside Virgo's stomach for guess how many months until September 23rd. Can anyone guess? 9 months.
Holy cow.
But it's not gestation period.
No, but 9 months is not the gestation period. That's a summary for what the gestation
don't
period is.
Don't poke holes. No more, Stu. You can't.
It's actually longer than
when you have a planet named after a guy in the stomach of a constellation of stars, and it's going to give birth after 9 months. How do you poke holes into that, Stu?
There's a lot of holes. I feel like we've made several leaps on top of leaps on top of leaps on top of jumps on top of life-saving off the top of a cliff.
You keep
dives.
Your eyes closed, pal. Okay. You keep your eyes closed.
So, September 23rd, which is this Saturday, numerologists and others who watch for signs in the heaven say that this is a very important date because these signs are happening in heaven. Do you have a couple of pieces from the documentary?
Yes. So, we have what I just described a whole lot better, which is the whole September 23rd theory.
All right.
We have.
Here it is.
On September 23rd of 2017, there is an alignment that is happening in the sun, the moon, and the stars, and the constellations, which looks like something that John wrote about in chapter 12 of the book of Revelation. In the first two verses, he's talking about the sun, the moon, the stars, the wandering stars, which we call planets, and a constellation, which is Virgo. John says that he sees a great sign in heaven, that there is a woman, she is clothed in the sun with the moon under her feet, and she has a crown of 12 stars on her head. But she's also pregnant, but not just pregnant, she's in labor and about to give birth.
We know that Virgo would be the woman. The moon will actually be at her feet. The sun will traverse right by her shoulder, clothing her in the sun. And in her head will be 12 stars. 9 of those will be the constellation of Leo. It makes up Leo. They're always there. But the 3 other ones that are not there are the syzygy, the alignment of planets. Mercury will align. We'll have Venus that's there, and also Mars, making up the 12 stars.
And we can see that the 12 constellations around the ecliptic only has one woman in it that the sun, the moon, and the wandering stars can travel through. And that would be Virgo.
Is really the cinematography actually is impressive.
It is impressive.
I will say.
Yeah. And it does. I mean, there could be, if we are talking about the constellations, which John over in Greece at that time would have been seeing the constellations in that way and describing. I mean, that does sound logical. Now, are they making it clear on what they think this means?
Well, no. There have been a few different interpretations, like you talked about before. Some people think this is the rapture. Other people think that this is the day that Jesus shows up. Again, other people think that this just begins, you know, the era.
I got news for you. Again, if Jesus is showing up on Saturday, this has been a pretty sweet period. I mean, I was expecting a lot worse than what we're going through right now. You know what I mean? If it's like Antifa, you know, John hyped this a little bit, just a little bit. So we have more from the documentary, and also the guy who, what is his name here?
David Mead?
Yeah, David Mead, the guy who says, you know, this is his theory, and he says, the media has it all wrong, and he's going to be joining us in a few minutes.
If you want to join Jason Batrill's cult, you can go to, what's the website for that, Jason? Where do people join and give you all their money before September 23rd?
Jason's cult.
Yeah, I'm not contributing.
Saturday's. Saturday's it. Give me your money.
I love these people who are like, yeah, and I've got a book out and like you to go out and buy it. What are you making money for? Why don't you just dump that out online if everything's going to be done on...
It's true.
Where do you get this video? Where did you find the video? What is it called?
This it's called The Sign, and it's an AT&T like DirecTV original.
I thought it was a mistake on the screen when they showed it here on Blaze TV. It credited it to AT&T. I'm like, what the heck is AT&T making this for? But through
really
DirecTV,
well
it is really,
really
well done.
Casper has done it again. They have reinvented their mattress with a new amazing Wave. I will tell you, I got this 2 weeks ago. And I put it on because I had to get rid of a mattress that we have, our Casper mattress up at the ranch. And I had a Tempur-Pedic mattress that I can't tell you how much it cost me. And I hate it with everything. I hate it with everything in me. And so Casper comes out with the new Wave. And I have a hard time because I have what's called TOS. And it's horrible, and I hate sleeping. And I know everybody has their own pains. You have shoulder pain, you have hip pain, whatever, back pain. The Wave was crafted so it helps you if you have hip pain and back pain and shoulder pain. And I'm going to be real honest with you. I didn't like it for the first two nights. And I think I said that on the air. I don't know if I made Casper real happy, but I'm like, I'm not sure. Last night I said to my wife, because we have the other mattress that I hate, sitting in the entryway of our house, and I said, before we give this away, let's just make sure this is better than the one I hate on sleeping. So I said just to my wife last night, let's get rid of the other mattress. I love this mattress. And it took me a week and a half before I could really decide. That is the secret of a Casper mattress. Secret of a Casper mattress is you can try it out in your own home for 100 nights. I want you to check out the new Wave. Their other mattress is really good. You'll have a great night's sleep on the regular Casper mattress. If you want to upgrade, if you have chronic pain, this one was really designed for you. Try it in your own home for 100 nights risk-free. If you don't love it, just ship it back. Go to Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. Get $50 off the purchase of your mattress. That's Casper.com, promo code Beck. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
There's a lot going on in the world. There's hurricanes and earthquakes and wars and rumors of wars. You name it, we got it going on. That has led some people to say, I wonder if these are signs of the times. David Mead is a researcher and a writer. And he says September 23rd is an important day. And he's going to be joining us here in just a second. This is, if you've heard of the September 23rd thing, this is his theory. But he says the media is getting it wrong. I don't think he's saying this is the end of the world. You know, that never ends well for people on Monday. I want to talk to him because I want to. I believe we have entered a new season. Now, I don't even know what that means, but I just feel that we've entered a new season, a new time, and things are going to get tough from here. That doesn't mean Jesus is coming or anything like that, and I wouldn't dare to predict or project that. But he says there are signs in heaven, in the heavens, as John the Revelator said, and we'll get to those and his full theory next.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
David Mead studied astronomy at the University of Louisville, worked in forensic investigations. His bio says last 10 years he spent with Fortune 1000 companies writing reports for management. He is a specialist in research and investigations, has a dozen books to his credit, including the best-selling Planet X 2017, The Arrival. He was raised Catholic. He says his book was based on hard science with some Bible prophecy thrown in. He said, I was raised Catholic and I believe in the book of Revelation. It was taught in Sunday schools when I was growing up, and it is still taught in Sunday schools around the nation and the world. He says that the media here in America, and you're going to find this hard to believe, has distorted what he has said is coming on Saturday, September 23rd. Is the date, and we welcome David to the program. Hi, David.
Glenn, thank you for a brilliant introduction. Love your show. Good to be here.
Thank you. So I have met several kinds of people. People who are claiming that you are saying that the end of the world is on Saturday and that we should all prepare. I've met people who say there's a good shot that, the rapture is happening on Saturday, or that Jesus is coming back. I want to know what you're saying. Because this is your theory.
Right, right. In September, I don't think anything is going to happen. I really don't. But there is an amazing sign, getting back to that Revelation 12:1-2 sign. It's a juxtaposition of the constellations Virgo and Leo. It's in Revelation 12:1-2, which is a preview of the entire apocalypse. Very interesting. It's the last great sign, according to the Greek terminology, in the book of Revelation. And I have used Stellarium astronomical software in my background in cryptography to decrypt that. And that sign has never occurred before in the last 6,000 years. It will not occur in the future. It's a once-in-human-history event. So it may be signaling what's called the end. I have some friends who believe this, and I'll just relate their theory. It may be signaling what is called the end of the 2,000-year church age. And then God apparently primarily deals more with Israel for about a seven-year period. And a lot happens during that 7 years. But that's a date range. That's not, a specific date. The problem with the book of Revelation is it's written in nonlinear sequence. And you can't really pinpoint a month, a week, a day. You know a lot's going to happen in that 7 years. Everything is going to happen. But
so the 7 years that you're talking about, Christians would refer to that as the 7 years of tribulation. Those are really bad years.
Yeah, and it's also called the Day of the Lord. It's also called the tribulation, as you mentioned. And there's 21 judgments. They're called, there's seven seal judgments. There's seven, the four horsemen. There's seven trumpet judgments. There's seven bowl judgments in the last half. Now, this celestial object known as Planet X, or the Bible calls it Wormwood in Revelation chapter 8, it causes most of the damage of the trumpet judgments. Now, it doesn't destroy the whole earth. It only impacts one-third of the earth. And the book of Revelation actually says it will land in a sea. So it's going to land either in one of the three oceans facing the sun. It's going to land either in the Atlantic, the Pacific, or the Indian Ocean.
So wait. So first, before we get to Wormwood, let's just seal up here. What does Saturday's sign say to you? What is it that you want people to hear about what's happening in the sky?
Well, if we were in Jerusalem at dawn on September 23rd in the morning this month, this year, we would see at least part of the sign in the heavens, in the constellations in the sky. And if we were using Stellarium, we would see the whole thing. And what it signals to me is, I think it's a huge sign. I don't think, because if you believe that John the Revelator, who wrote this book of Revelation, in Revelation chapter 4, the first verse, he says he was caught up to the throne room of God. Now, if this is true, this is information from the highest source available. This is not a monk in the 16th century or a Jewish rabbi in the 11th century. This is top secret, compartmentalized information.
And this is to herald in, you just said a minute ago, that things are out of sequence. So is this the sign that starts the clock ticking?
Exactly. You hit it. So that's the best synopsis I can give you. It starts a seven-year clock ticking. And as you notice, we've already had an acceleration. We've had $250 billion worth of damage by two hurricanes. We've had these high Richter scale earthquakes in Mexico. And if you actually adjust the Richter scale to what it really was in the early 1900s, that was over an 8.0. It was the same as the San Francisco earthquake.
So because the seven-year period of tribulation is a nightmare. You know, unless it's like a movie that everybody has hyped up and you're like, that wasn't that good. The seven-year period washes everything in blood. So it must get really bad really fast.
Yes, and what I'm concerned is, I'm concerned when Planet X approaches, when this Nibiru system approaches the sun, it's not going to collide with us, but it has a 250,000-mile debris field, and in it are a couple of asteroids, one of which is called Wormwood. Now, Wormwood has to be at least 3 kilometers to destroy one-third of the oceans. But anyway, getting back to that, that is the problem as it approaches. We live in what's called an electric universe, and there's plasma in outer space. It interacts among the various planetary bodies. As this approaches, the magnetosphere of the sun will be affected.
Okay.
It will heat up. It'll produce solar flares. Could knock out our electrical grid.
Okay, hold on just a second. Okay, so the first part that we have to get to, let's just seal this up. First part is David Mead believes this, the guy whose theory that September 23rd is, nothing's going to happen on September 23rd. This is a gateway that it starts the clock ticking for the seven-year tribulation period, according to David Mead. Now, Planet X is something entirely different, because Planet X is this theory. Is this your theory, or how do we even know Planet X even exists?
Well, it's been researched for almost 100 years. They started looking for it back in the 30s because something was perturbing the orbits of Neptune and Uranus. But NASA discovered it in 1983 with the infrared satellite. And in fact, the four big newspapers, the New York Times and the Post among them, wrote articles about it. And then 2 weeks later, suddenly, at the end of 83, all public information was closed down. And from that point forward, I've had evidence that the elite and the government have built over 100 deep underground military bases for protection. From that point on, the government started preparing, and the public received a major blackout.
Okay, David, we've jumped into a different pool here now. So there is a planet that the government is covering up?
Absolutely. It's a major cover-up by NASA, and it's not uncommon, because normally in any government operation, you've got 10 or 20 people at the top that have compartmentalized above top secret clearances, and they know everything, and nobody else, the 99%, they know nothing. So they have plausible deniability, but the ones at the top are under non-disclosure agreements, and they could be could lose everything.
And why are they covering Planet X up?
My personal opinion, I think they want to keep the cash registers ringing till the last minute, because there's a lot of very expensive coastal, commercial, and residential real estate around the world.
What good is the money if Wormwood is coming and the planet is going to carry with it all kinds of death.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Even Pope John Paul II, he made a speech before some bishops in Europe in the 1980s, and he said if the third secret of Fatima is that the world's coastal areas are going to be flooded and destroyed, it would be better that we didn't even release it. So he was speaking in dark speech there. I think he knows.
Hmm. Any hard evidence that this planet that is being hidden, in what this planet is, it has a very weird trajectory, an ellipse that comes and is coming between the Earth and what? The moon?
The Earth and the moon, or the moon's pretty close, but between the Earth and the sun, I would say. Good point.
Okay.
So I would say it'll probably approach 10 to 14 million miles away.
And has it done this before?
Yes, I have studied the Niebuhr Sky Disk, which is an archaeological discovery in Germany some years ago, and I believe it occurred about 3,700 years ago, and there's a chapter in that in my book. It probably caused the great flood, you know, at that time, what the Bible calls Noah's flood.
And how long before we could see, you know, how long before the jig would be up? I mean, where is Planet X now? Because it'd be pretty hard to have a planet sneak up on us.
Right. Well, it's not going to sneak up to the South Pole Telescope. You know, it's not going to sneak up to the Vatican's secret observatory on Mount Graham. They're watching it in infrared right now. I have a friend who's seen it through the Hubble. So I have pictures of it by an astronomer in Paris who worked at a multinational observatory. I have pictures of it from a colleague, Marshall Masters, who analyzed a jetliner photo of it above Utah. Mm. So people have seen it. In rare circumstances, you can get a picture of it from the Earth, the plane of the Earth.
All right, David. I appreciate having you on, and we look forward to seeing what the future brings. But then again, perhaps not. But it's good talking to you. Author of Planet X.
You can get David's book, Planet X, 2017 Arrival, online and wherever books are sold. He has a bunch of other books you can read as well, including The Coup d'Etat Against President Donald J. Trump and The Prepper's Guide to Surviving EMP Attacks, Solar Flares, and Grid Failures.
It's not helping things.
Well, I mean, I
it's not helping things.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, obviously NASA says Planet X isn't a thing, right? And he has an answer to that, and that NASA is in kind of engaging in a conspiracy to hide it from people.
I have a hard time with
that.
Yeah,
I do too. And then he also mentioned the there's a story on Christianity Today about this. It's written by the executive director of the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton College, Ed Stetzer, and he says, first of all, there's no such thing as a Christian numerologist. I don't think he's saying he's a Christian numerologist. He's a numerologist and he's a Christian, I think, is what he's trying to communicate there. But also, in addition to that, it mentions that this planetary alignment has happened four times in the last 1,000 years. Now, I would assume he would push back against that. But I would say that the just give you two possibilities here. Either,
yeah,
the entire sort of mainstream Christian situation is engaged in a giant conspiracy with the government to hide Planet X from you, along with NASA. Or maybe David's not right. I'm just throwing that one out there. I know David seemed like a nice guy, so I don't want to, you know, we'll see. I mean, obviously, we'll... we'll have a few years
hard
here
time
to check it out.
You know, I don't have a hard time seeing the, you know, the sun on Earth clothed with the sun and the alignment in the heavens. Okay, I can see that. I don't necessarily say that's absolutely what it means, but it could be.
I'm sensing a little skepticism.
yeah, I know. I have a hard time going the rest of the way.
Can you allow me to write the ship really quick?
In a minute. Your home is broken into. You immediately lose about $2,000. But what you lose is much more than this. You lose the sanctity of your house. There is nothing like having somebody rob you. It's something that you just, I don't know, you just don't shake for in a quick order. Simply Safe will protect your doors and your windows in your home. You can get the motion sensors, the entry sensors, and the system is completely wireless, so you can set it up yourself.
I will say, too, Simply Safe, there's no contracts, so if the end of the world comes, you don't get stuck paying for multiple years.
Amen, brother.
You know,
that's amen.
A big deal.
Amen. Simply Safe, it's $15 a month. I want you to go to simplysafe.com right now. That's simplysafebeck.com, and you'll get the 10% discount. If you want the security system right away, because Saturday, I mean, things change, you can go to your local Best Buy and get your home protected by tonight. But if you want to save the 10%, go to simplysafebeck.com now. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
You can write this ship for us, Jason.
I'm going to kill the skepticism, but I'm going to do it tomorrow because we got plenty of time. We got 48 hours.
We got 48 hours before the whole world changes. So, yeah, tomorrow you'll kill the skepticism. Quickly, let me go to Tom in Ohio. Hello, Tom.
Morning, fellas. Hi. Yes, it was approximately 10 months ago, CBS News, which you got to take with a grain of salt as it is, but CBS News stated that NASA had said there is a, appears to be a planet about 10 times the mass of the Earth.
Yeah.
Beyond the solar system.
Correct.
Due to the fact that objects in the Kuiper Belt are not responding properly or as they should in a enclosed solar system. So they verified that there is a planet out there.
Right. So I don't know if that is the planet X that he's talking about, but I do remember that story, and it was more than CBS News. You know, we keep going back and forth with Pluto, whether it's a planet or a dog, but now... there has been apparently verification that there is another one way out of our solar system. Let's go to Joe. Hello, Joe. Quickly, you're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, hey guys. I was just calling to tell you that I agree with David, the author of the book, about people who have taken pictures of it. I have a picture of Planet X that I took. I can send it to you guys. But it's hard to see because Bigfoot kind of takes up most of the picture.
it's not helpful.
If you were Bigfoot, I mean, then you've got a nice picture of yourself.
Thank you very much,
that's
Joe.
Something that's helpful.
Tomorrow we'll continue this. Just to do a little bit of sweep up because Saturday is the day. What do you believe? Sign in the heavens, Planet X. A little bit more tomorrow.
Glenn Beck.
If Planet X is going to come by and the world is going to end, you're going to need a Liberty Safe to protect your belongings. Liberty Safe is they're the best safes on the market. They make it really easy to own too, because these are big boys. Okay. LibertySafe.com. You can buy a Liberty Safe at a great price and receive 12 months of interest free payments with $0 down and 0% APR. It's not going to get any easier than that. They offer Liberty Safe for as low as $20 a month. It's $20 a month. That's easy. Peace of mind, lifetime warranty, and this is a big deal, in-home delivery service. You're not going to just put this one on your, you know, on your shoulder and carry it out. This is unmatched in the industry. You can get it right installed right in your home, which is what I did. It's 12 months interest-free payments for as low as $20 a month on approved credit. Every home has valuables that need protecting, and every home needs a Liberty Safe. Go to LibertySafe.com now, the home of the best-built safes on the planet. Go there now, LibertySafe.com.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
There is a new poll that shows nearly half of Americans now support a single-payer healthcare system. Think of that. The fundamental transformation of America. Nearly half now say a government system like the VA is okay. That's 49% of Americans, to be exact. Only 35% say they oppose such a plan. Wow. Now, if we look at this, it should tell us a couple of things. One, It's a warning. Two, it's a lesson for the way forward. So let's first start with the warning. The fact that at first glance, nearly half of Americans say they would support a single-payer system means that conservatives or libertarians, constitutionalists, have not done their job. We haven't done the hard work of educating people, and every time we do, we're speaking a language that they're just not hearing. It's not working what we're doing. Because when this happens, and people aren't seeing the pitfalls of a one-size-fits-all healthcare system, the American idea is gone. But if you look deeper in the polling, you find a lesson for the way forward. And there is actually a poll from earlier this summer that found a clear majority, 55% to be exact, supported a single-payer system. But that poll also found that once people were educated about the reality of single payer, higher taxes, giving up their employer-sponsored plans, and a government-run plan, opposition goes up to 61%. So once they're educated, 61% oppose the single payer once they really know what it means. That's our lesson. And to not shout it, and to not use hyperbole, but to actually just teach it. Education, education, education. The truth is, Americans don't know what single payer means. But the truth is, even more, they don't know what fascism, communism, socialism, progressivism, they don't know what populism means. Once they do, they're not real fans. So the lesson we take from this is it is our full-time job to find out different ways of presenting the truth, not our truth, the truth, and let people be educated and decide for themselves.
Thursday, September 21st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Do you remember during the Tea Party movement at its height, where the IRS started playing games with people's information? And imagine if during the Tea Party days, if you had gone to the 912 Project and you had just searched, or you had gone to a Tea Party website and you had just searched, and you had maybe posted. And then some people go out and they start to do something violent. Should the government be able to have the names, the IP addresses, and the search history of everyone who went to that website? This is what's being debated right now. But it's being debated not with a 912 project or a Tea Party project. It's something that would make a lot of people on the right happy, I guess. Disrupt J20. That was the group that disrupted the inauguration of Donald Trump. Now the government has arrested 200 people under felony rioting. But the government wants the IP addresses, the emails, and the history of anyone who engaged with these people through the website Disrupt J20. Should they have that right? And how would you feel if the situation were reversed?
We've talked a lot about these lines and how they're drawn with the government and how it relates to your data. Wanted to get someone who really knows these things, the ins and outs of it. Saul Hansel is a former technology reporter at the New York Times. He's now the managing director at Media Paradox Labs.
So, Saul, you wrote about this in 2008 about your op-ed was "One Subpoena is All It Takes to Reveal Your Online Life." We're entering a new world here, are we not?
The world, even in the 9 years since I wrote that, the amount of information about you that is online somewhere, sent up by your cell phone about your location, all the questions you ask Siri, all sorts of other things, is exponentially higher. So what you said in the introduction, I think, is critical here. We've got to be very thoughtful in drawing some lines so that prosecutors can do the right things, but not be searching everything about everybody, so, which is available to them now.
So, Saul, here's the problem that I think we have in society right now. We are divided into two camps, and I think these are bogus camps, both of them. I think they both are, in many ways, opting for the same thing, because when it's their side that has the power, they're all for it. When they're on the receiving end, they're all against it. We have a job to do to try to convince people on both sides. You don't want to give the power like this to the government ever. How do we do that?
You know, I think that the way you introduced this, where you said to people who might have identified with one group and against the other, that things switch, right? We know that there is a history of governments snooping on people where they shouldn't. The FBI, you know, tracking the extramarital affairs of Martin Luther King, all kinds of things where governments do what they shouldn't do. That seems bad, but there are really horrible criminals to blow things up and kill people, and that's bad. And the art here, right, the Fourth Amendment says the right of people to be secure against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated without probable cause. So there's a line here that has become very, very difficult in a world of digital information.
We were, you know, the Fourth Amendment was written at a time when people were using quill pens. And so it's easy for people to say, well, no, I wrote that and that's my paper. What are you doing? You can't go through my desk. You just can't come in here. However, everything we have, literally everything we have and done and thought and searched and questioned, everything is now up in a cloud and it is stored forever. And there is some disconnect with people on the Fourth Amendment if it's on the cloud. And people will make the excuse, well, I'm not looking for some, I'm not doing anything wrong. Why, I don't have a problem if they look at everything. That's insanity.
You know, the law has made a distinction, right, between things that are public, things that are private and personal, you know, in your house, and things that are sort of intermediate, like a business record, right? So a cop can go up to a dry cleaner and say, you know, with a certain amount of subpoena power, did so-and-so dry clean a suit at this date? A much higher standard applies to going into your house and looking in the pockets of your suit, right? The business record was seen as something that's not quite public, but not a secret. The problem is, as you say, we're now putting our secrets, things you might not even keep in your desk drawer, you might keep in your Gmail account or in your, you know, online files, or are in the photographs that you don't even know have been backed up to somebody's server. And so at a minimum, I think the policy issue is, should we treat the cloud extensions of our life with the same protections that we treat things in our homes and in our personal privacy? That's a question that I don't think law enforcement wants to ask, because they like it this way. They get more stuff than ever. But I think it's a good discussion to have.
And it's a tough thing, Saul, because if there is an attack, if there is some crime, people are going to want it solved. They're going to want the law enforcement to have these tools at their disposal. And they're always going, it's always going to be more powerful to say, this person could have been saved, their life could have been saved, if we had these powers. And I don't know that, you know, the story of, well, the government searched too much through my Gmail is going to convince people the other way. How do you get people kind of across that line and to understand that it's really a bigger issue than that? Because this is everything you've ever thought. They can prove in lawsuits, things that you made in jokes, they can tie to whatever they're accusing you of now. There's a real big consequence of this.
Right. I mean, you know, Glenn said earlier, you know, people say, my life is an open book, what does it matter? And, you know, that's true. You know, most people are really boring most of the time.
Yes.
But every now and then, right, some set of things happens that you either have a real secret, maybe even not, you know.
Or you don't, may I suggest this?
Yeah.
Saul, I mean, I know I'm different, but I don't think, you know, there's probably just more frequency of this because of what I do, probably because of what you do. I'm searching for all kinds of crazy stuff.
Sure.
And I'm looking up, you know, mass murder and everything else. And you could, if you had access to all of my life, you could assemble things and say, well, look at the picture we have here, Mr. Beck. And I would be then in the situation where I would have to explain, no, that's not what it is. That's not what. No. And so it, you don't want people to be able to come in and assemble parts of your life, even if you don't have something to hide, which we all do. Even if something you don't have something to hide, when somebody has all of your information, they can assemble it in very nefarious ways should they choose.
Yes. So they can find, you know, inadvertent things or, you know, misleading things. And we also have a general, you know, standard here that the cops need to know what they're looking for, and they can't use a search for one thing as a way to just fish around to see, you know, there must be something this guy did wrong. And right. So if, you know, and what you described is absolutely true. What they're going to do in this case, right, because there's a there's supposedly a compromise the courts are imposing, but I think it has the risk that you're pointing out, which is the government is going to go search through a bunch of emails among people who are involved in this, you know, disrupt website for certain terms, bombs or violence or riot or whatever they want, and then they get to read those emails. And guess what? Those are emails by people who they didn't suspect and may not, in fact, they maybe have used the word riot in a completely different context. And suddenly the emails are read and somebody might notice something else, and it can be used by, you know, the government to harass dissenters or do all kinds of bad things. So I want to go, you know, what Stu said. Yes, if I was searching every email that was sent by anybody in the world in the 2 weeks before 9/11, and maybe I could figure out who did something that, you know, or, and I searched for keywords, you know, you might have prevented something really bad, but is that a price you're willing to pay?
To
let the government go on fishing?
No. No, it's not for me. I was, I had a conversation with Eric Schmidt from Google, and
yes.
He said, and he's said this publicly a few times, that I don't remember the year, but I think it was like 2025 or something like that. He said, people's lives will be so open and so destroyed by what they have put out online, just haphazardly or not even thinking, that they'll actually have to change their name by the time they're, you know, 25 years old. I don't think people understand the world is changing and how dramatically things are going to change.
I think, you know, I have teenage daughters, and basically my advice to them is be careful about secrets. You can have some, but you shouldn't have very many. You should, you know, think about them carefully and preserve them, and you should make them only analog, right? Once you make it digital, it's not a secret. And that's a change for all of us, because everything is digital.
Wow.
And
how do you,
that's a world,
how,
what a world this is, man. This is going to be tough, especially when you're in that age. You're, you know, you're 15, 16 years old. Like, you're not thinking that way. You're not thinking generationally, right? You're just thinking about, you know,
today. Stop being paranoid and all of that. Saul, when you look at the world and you see that we have, on both sides, we have nationalists and populists, and we have anarchists. And as the world goes into trouble, usually people become desperate and they look for a strong man. Are you optimistic that we make this transition with our souls and ourselves intact?
Nice little question you're asking.
I know.
I want to be. I think that, you know, we're thinking about the Fourth Amendment, and you see the Fourth Amendment becomes a reaction against an overreach, right? So we may well have to get to a point when we realize what are the consequences of the government being able to do everything that it can do, private companies, right? There was a story about how Uber's internal systems were so lax that anybody in the company could go pull up where anybody was you know, any Uber user was where their cab was at any given point, and just follow people around. So as you know, what we're going to need to have is to say, all right, this digital information is so pervasive that we're going to need to come up with some very clear, strong rules that say, this is possible, but it's not okay. And we're going to need to say that as a society instead of nibbling away mm-hmm. at the edges and saying, this analogy for the rule we made about postal envelopes still applies to your Gmail. And I don't know what it's going to take. You know, the system, you know, does come up with some compromises here and there, but I don't think it's enough to take stock of the completely new world we're in.
Saul, thank you very much.
And scary stuff. Saul Hansel, he is a former reporter for the New York Times in technology and now runs the Media Paradox Labs in New York City.
We really want to make this a home for you every day of meaningful conversations. Conversations with people that you may disagree with, but issues of the day that I think actually matter. What matters most, and then let's have meaningful conversations. Education is key when you're a gun owner. The U.S. Concealed Carry Association agrees, and they want to help you with your Concealed Carry and Family Defense Guide. Now, they've just published this. You're going to learn how to defend, detect attackers before they see you. I can't believe we live in a world where I should have a booklet in my home where I can teach this to my kids, especially if they're college age, how to survive a mass attack. My gosh, what kind of world do we live in? What are the safest and most dangerous places to sit in restaurants or in concerts? How to responsibly own and store a gun? There's a whole bunch of stuff in there, and it is all really important. It's 164 pages, and it comes with a bonus audio version so you can listen in your car. The guide is 100% free, and for a limited time, you'll also get a bonus home defense checklist. Please, make sure that you know what the laws are and you are prepared, because your life will change. And make sure your kids are prepared to defend themselves without any fear. Protectanddefend.com. 100% free instant access right now. It's protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
You know, today we've been talking a little bit about freedom of speech because there are people that just don't believe that speech should be protected. I think it's, 49% of millennials now are saying, no, hate speech doesn't fit into the First Amendment. And it's really important that we really teach to each other that our speech is protected, and the one that has to be protected, and we have to stand up for most of the stuff that we disagree with. Otherwise, we're in trouble when power changes. But there is one speech that I don't know is protected, and we saw it yesterday on CNN. this was a riveting scene from CNN. It's from Miguel Marquez, who was down in Mexico City among the rubble, and they are searching for survivors. And I want you to listen to this, because they're searching with the dogs and they're listening to be able to hear anybody. Listen.
The pace here at the school has really quickened in the last couple of hours, Jake. I'm going to show you sort of what's happening here right now.
Now, Jake, what you're looking at are people holding their hands up. They have asked that the crowd go silent again. I can give you a little sense of just how quiet it gets here.
Yeah.
It is eerie to think that this is the sign of hope in Mexico today.
That Jake. Would be you to shut up. Shut up. Shut up. I mean, the golf announcers are quieter than that. I mean, geez, they're okay. What they're doing now is they're telling everybody to be quiet so we can hear if they're survivors. Shut up, man.
Glenn Beck.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So last night, I think I saw this on the Daily Wire, and I read the Daily Wire every day, and and they had a story about Lawrence O'Donnell. And it was, you've got to click on this. Larry O'Donnell goes crazy. He loses his mind. He's gone insane. He's talking about hammers and hearing voices in his head. Make sure you turn the volume down.
Okay, that's what it was.
And, well, I mean, and not to single them out. That's how everybody,
that's how everybody reported it. It was, in fact, theirs was probably the most sane.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went from there to what is it? TMZ. Oh my gosh, the way TMZ was.
And aliens will land halfway through.
So I'm clicking on this and I'm like, what the heck did Larry O'Donnell say? Now I have deleted this, but I want you to hear this. Is he's in the middle of an interview on MSNBC and he's live. So it's a network at 30 Rock. And I want you to hear the hammering that you can hear in his studio as he's on the air. So he's finishing up an on-air interview, and then the camera goes off, and he does lose it. But I have to tell you, I'm no fan of Lawrence O'Donnell at all. But I think I might have lost it a little bit more than this with the hammering. Okay, now listen.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer? Where is it?
I don't know.
Where's the hammer? Is it on the... Go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering. Stop the hammering. I'll go down to the floor myself and stop it. Keep the commercial break going. Call Phil Griffin. I don't care who you have to call. Stop the hammering. Empty out the control room and find out where this is going on. It's either there or there or out there somewhere. The woman talking in my ear was talking about the Labor Day special repeatedly. Every time we went to a SOT. Yeah, what do you mean in the conversation? Not in the Bush SOT, no. F***ing out of control.
Okay, so, yeah, now here's what's happening. In his earpiece, he's hearing,
there's a Labor Day sale going on.
Every time he goes to a SOT is sound on tape. So every time they throw to something that is like, you know, George Bush saying something, he's hearing, not George Bush, he's hearing,
and there's a Labor Day sale going on.
That is discombobulating. Imagine having a conversation and trying to just like act like nothing's going on with some woman talking about a Labor Day sale in your ear.
Very difficult.
Very difficult. And then on top of it, and Sarah, I wish they wouldn't have cut the hammering out. If you can find the place at the very beginning, he doesn't swear at the very beginning. So if you can just play it, he's on air, and I'm telling you, it's that loud.
Yeah, that's completely inexcusable.
I mean, you can't expect it to be. He doesn't lose his cool. He's like, hey, by the way, where's the, anybody notice the, you know, you would be a little, I'm trying to do a professional program here.
Do you find this to be interesting, coming from the person who would continually lead tours through the studio while Pat and Stew was going on? But yes, I agree
with
your analysis. As I said,
he's trying to do a professional program.
Glenn Beck.
All right, let me switch gears here. I want to talk to you a little bit about something that we were trying to do on theblaze.com. Sorry, I'm having hammering happening in my headphones right now. Thank you. Stop the hammering. Okay. Last night, if you haven't watched the Blaze TV for a while, by the way, I'm just going to announce it.
Does not go well when you do things like this. When you say
it's a really cool, it's an Apple thing. I won't announce it. I won't announce it until I get somebody upstairs saying, yeah, no, we can announce it. I don't even know who the people are upstairs. I am the upstairs now. How
you are the upstairs.
I am
true.
Going to announce it. All right. I'm not gonna. Stu,
I just don't even know what it is. It's usually you blurt something out that is not ready.
So anyway, stop the hammering. Damn it, stop the hammering. So the Blaze has been going through some changes, and I know that there's a story. Glenn Beck is, you know, he's losing his shirt, he's going out of business. Yeah, I might be. I very well might be. In fact, all of us might be. And this is the one thing that I can't seem to get people to report on or listen to. It's really strange because I'll have off-air conversations with really smart people in media, and they know. They absolutely know. But the average Joe doesn't. And the reason why I bring this up is because this is going to happen in your life. If you're a truck driver, this is going to be happening in the next 5 years. Be prepared. Your industry is going to be turned upside down and inside out. I don't know what jobs are going to be around. And unless you're going to be in a union that says, no, we're going to save all jobs.
Yeah, and that works out really well when they say that, too.
Well, when I went to, I was in WNBC in 1984, I think, and I had never seen anything like it. I was a disc jockey, and I would go and I would take the record out of the sleeve, and I would put it on the turntable, and I would cue the song up, and then I would push the button for it to start, and then I would turn on my microphone, and I would say something. Went to WNBC, no, mm-mm. Because in the 1950s, they had all of these people that were, you know, live musicians on radio. And when radio said, we're just going to play music, all those live musicians got together in their unions and said, no, you're not. And they boycotted the stations and picketed, and it was horrible. So they said, OK, all right, what we're going to do is, because music is with musicians, the musicians union can take the record, take it out of the sleeve, and then hand it to the engineer. And the engineer will put it on the turntable, lift up the needle, cue it, and push the button. The disc jockey can't do anything but turn on his own microphone and point for the union member to start the record. And then when the record is over, the musicians union, after the technical union takes the needle off the record, he can lift it up off the turntable, put it back. It took three or four people to do a disc jockey's job. It was crazy. And that was all because they didn't want to lose the jobs in the 1950s. That's the kind of world that we're going to try to enter into. And everybody's going to be screaming, somebody's got to protect my job. I'm telling you, they're gone. They're gone. We have to rethink everything. And it could provide a really exciting, dynamic opportunity. Last night, I was watching the Glenn Beck program at 5 o'clock, and Stu is our new executive producer on the TV show, and this is the first thing that we've done as we're retooling a new Blackboard show that I think you're really going to like that'll start in October. And this is kind of a behind the scenes. And in the episode last night, I talked about the future of the media, and in particular, you, and how we're trying to serve you. I would urge anyone who is in the media, anyone who is thinking about doing anything in the media, to watch last night's episode. If you have ever thought about subscribing to The Blaze, or you were once a subscriber, I want you to see last night's episode. You can see all this week what we've been doing behind the scenes this summer, and it'll show you the direction we're going and what we're trying to do. And we really need your help because it's radically different, and we're not going to get it right for several months, but we've just started this journey, and I thought it was really important to share with you because it's going to happen in your business as well.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to handle all of this stuff is to just be upfront and transparent about it, right? I mean, when you're going through it, I think instead of trying to act as if you have everything solved and you know everything about everything, if you're just kind of honest about where you want to go and the things you're going to try, and then when they suck, you move on to something else. You admit that, hey, that one didn't work. We're going to try something else. I think that's smart, you know?
If you're not changing, listen to me, if you're a business person now, I don't care what business, you're in the sock drawer business. If you're not disrupting yourself right now, if you're not changing, you're going to be playing by somebody else's rules. And this happened in the Great Depression. You know, the people who made the Auburn, one of the greatest cars ever, they were boxed out because the big three They had gotten in with the right people, the progressive people, and they made all the rules. And they put great tire industry, great tire companies out of business. They put great car companies out of business. The same thing is happening. It's being redesigned. This time you don't have to go to the government. This time you just have to think out of the box and what is the best way to remove all friction from my customer. How can I serve them? This is truly the ultimate time for Adam Smith's Wealth of Nation and Moral Sentiments. Just try to serve the people who come into your store. What will make their life easier? Give that to them, and I think you survive.
By the way, you can subscribe to The Blaze at theblaze.com/TV. And I can tell you, as executive producer of this particular program, I can promise you this. Every single night, we are going to hire someone from the Carpenters Union to hammer somewhere in the studio to make Glenn look insane until he loses his mind on the air. Because that is what people want to watch. And
I think you really need to.
Eventually, we're going to get it to happen.
Make me look that way. I think I'm doing that on my.
And the good thing, it's on the internet if you subscribe there, so we don't have to bleep any of his swears if he starts letting F-bombs go. So
don't think that's going to happen.
It's going to be great.
Our financial markets are about to enter uncharted territory. The Federal Reserve announced, and we are going to do a segment with Danielle DiMartino Booth. She used to work for the Dallas Fed. She's coming up. We're going to spend 5 minutes with her at the top of the hour. This is really, really important. The Federal Reserve has announced yesterday that next month it's going to start shrinking its portfolio of bonds that it acquired after the 2008 crash. What that means is they bought up all this junk. It's $4.5 trillion of assets. All these bonds. What happens to the bond market? And they're going to start offloading all of these bonds. There's going to be a glut of these bonds. And they say, well, we're going to do it very, very carefully. Well, nobody's ever done this before. Our financial markets are about to enter uncharted territory. I don't know, but I have a feeling that we have crossed a threshold and things are not going to get more stable from here. I would like you to read the free report from President Reagan's budget director, David Stockman, on the five threats to the economy. I want you to listen to Daniel DiMartino Booth coming up in about 20 minutes from now. And I also want you to call Goldline. Get their important risk information. Find out if gold or silver is right for you. But I want you to call 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE. Do it right now.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
That's interesting. Jonathan Dunn comes over, and he is an Irishman who called this program from Ireland, I don't even know, 5 years ago, 3 years ago?
I think first was about 4 or 5 years ago.
And he was listening to us, and he just loves America. And he comes over, and now he's giving speeches. Where are you giving speeches this in the next few days?
So I'm in Fort Worth tonight. Then I travel up to Tulsa to a 9/12 project. Tulsa tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Then travel down to Oklahoma for a 12 noon speech. Another 9/12 group. And then I'm giving a speech, last one, for a Constitution Day event in San Angelo on Saturday.
That's great. So he has a really great perspective on America and who we are and what we have forgotten. And we were talking yesterday. I read a book called How the Irish Saved Western Civilization. I read it over the summer. And it's basically how all of the libraries, all of the books, all the records were being destroyed all over after the fall of the Roman Empire. And, you know, Ireland was up, but nobody cares about the Irish. And so they took all these records and all the books and they just kept them and stored them. And that's why we know a lot of ancient history is because of the Irish. But it tells a story in there about St. Patrick.
Okay.
What do they teach in Ireland about St. Patrick?
It's a day to get drunk.
Right. Okay. They teach that in America,
He banished the snakes.
Right.
What you find very interesting, so I know very little about St. Patrick, but I know that the headlines did, the history of the headlines. What's funny, very interesting, in that we're going to a secular society and more and more and more. than we yet we love St. Patrick, and we're exporting St. Patrick around the world. St. Patrick is generally the person who's mainly credited for bringing Christianity to Ireland. That's actually the truth.
So, you know, here's the amazing thing about St. Patrick, if this book is accurate. But you should look into it because it's phenomenal. So he is living down, I don't know, some English place, and he's actually sold into slavery. He's up in a you know, as a shepherd, and they come, and Ireland was really bad with slavery, really bad. And he was taken on a slave ship and dumped over into Ireland. And he was a guy who didn't really have any, you know, God, didn't follow anything. And he's thrown into this place where he's a shepherd, and no one can talk to slaves, and he is alone with the sheep, and he prays all day long. And he's meditating, and he's trying to remember the things that he heard about Christianity and everything else. And he has this deep spiritual awakening with God. And he's praying that he can be released. So in the middle of the night, he says, I think an angel, or he heard a voice, and it said, get up, get out right now. So he leaves. He escapes. He goes back home, and then he hears another voice saying, go back. And don't rid it of snakes. Go back and free the slaves. He was an abolitionist. He was the guy who stopped slavery in Ireland. Mm-hmm. How do we not know that story?
Because it's all wrapped around in Christianity. It's a certain narrative to teach.
I mean, it's truly crazy.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
How do you tell the good guys from the bad guys? Even the very elect are going to be deceived. Look at the Middle East right now in the war in ISIS. ISIS is obviously an easy answer. Definitely bad guys, right? But after that, it gets a little harder, doesn't it? Turkey claims to be our ally, but they're letting terrorists slip into Syria since this entire thing started. Defeating ISIS isn't even their main objective. Killing Kurds. Now, that is an objective that they are with. Iran is a pretty easy one as well, right? You look at Iran, we consider we don't consider them allies. We've been, you know, flying air support for their proxy forces since this war began. But the very same forces that were attacking our soldiers and Marines just a few years ago, but we're protecting them. How about Iraq? Most of the commanders on ISIS came from Saddam's army. When ISIS came back, the Iraqi army basically handed them Mosul and half the country, along with all the weapons. In the entire region, only the Iraqi Kurds held their ground and fought. And they fought for Muslims and Christians and Yazidis and atheists. You might remember the Kurds from the primary debates during the election. Supporting the Kurds became a unanimous catchphrase. We support the Kurds. Out of all of the countries that I've just mentioned, the Kurds, they're the only good guys. It couldn't be more obvious. But for some reason, the State Department is having a hard time with this. Yesterday, they announced that they are opposing the Iraqi Kurd independence referendum, which is happening on Monday and could put the entire Middle East even in more chaos. But it also does something else. It puts us in alignment with the three countries that I just mentioned that are not our allies or our friends: Turkey, Iran, and Iraq. Three countries that at very best do not share our values. We have so wronged the Kurds for so long, and it shouldn't come as a surprise to you, but one of the only countries to step forward and support Kurdish independence is Israel. Why? because they know exactly what it's like to stand all by yourself. They know what it's like to be a minority in this area and have the entire region want to see you fail and to see all of you wiped off the face of the earth. Why is it so hard for the United States to recognize and support those who actually deserve our support? This is the reason why our foreign policy is so hard to figure out. This is the reason why people hate us over in the Middle East. Yes, there's a reason. Because we help those who don't share our values. And then we don't stand up for those who do share our values. The only way we're going to ever start to win back some of the respect, to win back our honor and integrity, is to have some honor and integrity. It's wrong that we don't support the Kurdish independence in Iraq. It is wrong, and we are on the wrong side.
It's Thursday, September 21st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So yesterday, the Federal Reserve moved to dismantle a pillar of crisis-era support for the world's biggest economy and stuck with its forecast to raise interest rates again. Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria have devastated many communities, inflicting severe hardship, said the Federal Open Market Committee. But the storm-related disruptions and rebuilding will affect economic activity in the near term, but past experience suggests that the storms are unlikely to materially alter the course of the national economy over the medium term, and that is why we are going to shrink our $4.5 trillion balance sheet. Most people don't even know what I'm even talking about, but this is a really big deal, and I really thought with the storms and especially with what's happening in Puerto Rico, we might want to check in and see what the Fed is doing.
Yeah, if that made your head hurt like it did mine, we needed someone who actually really understands this stuff. Danielle DiMartino Booth is the author of Fed Up, an insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America. And she joins us now.
So, Danielle, tell me what this means and what this is going to do.
Well, look, the Federal Reserve, in my personal opinion, didn't have any business blowing up their balance sheet and buying securities to the tune of $4.5 trillion in the first place. So I'll be happy to see natural price discovery go back into the hands of people who should determine the prices. That's one of the tenets of capitalism.
But this is
the hurricanes all wrong.
Okay, so before we go to the hurricanes, I am with you that they shouldn't have bought it up, but they bought $4.5 trillion in bonds. Does this affect us at all when they are starting to liquidate all of these? Who's going to buy them, and does this make us more unstable, or does this help us?
Of course it makes us more unstable. They're the ones who called it quantitative easing, so I'm not quite sure why they refused to use the opposite term, quantitative tightening, unless they just want to keep us in the dark. They've never done that before.
No. So my concern has been, and I have not heard anybody talk about this. In fact, just as I read a minute ago, everybody seems to be dismissing the impact economically of these hurricanes. And I'm really concerned about Puerto Rico, which has been on the edge of default forever. And now they're saying that the island may be uninhabitable for weeks. There's no electricity. It's been utterly destroyed. How do they make their bond payments? How do they stay solvent? And what does that mean to us? Because aren't we on the hook for them?
Absolutely. There is no such thing as a Brexit. It's against the law. We can't jettison Puerto Rico. It's simply not allowed. And yes, we will be on the hook. Look, fresh data came out that's already showing mortgage delinquencies in August were spiking because of Hurricane Harvey. And that only captured 3 days of August, and mortgage delinquencies in Harvey's path are already spiking. Well, I've got news for you. The delinquency rate in Puerto Rico is twice the national average, and
that's before
it will be
this
economically devastating to that island.
So, but what does that mean to You know, they used to say, if America catches cold, the rest of the world gets sick. What does it mean that Puerto Rico is devastated economically? What will that mean? Will it mean anything to us?
Well, it'll just mean that we'll have a bigger tab to cover. The bill will get bigger.
You said,
so, I mean, I guess that's important if you pay taxes.
you know, you said that you were looking at the default of homes, but also auto loans. I've read several stories now. Kentucky, they have just they're trying to deal with a run on the pensions because people are like, I don't think I'm going to get my pension, so I'm going to cash out right now. Illinois is the same way. These pensions are so close. How concerned are you with the numbers that you've been watching? Are we where we were last spring, or are we closer to the edge?
Oh, I would say that we're much closer to the edge. I wrote recently that I mentioned that we should break Illinois up into a few pieces, and boy, did I get a lot of angry neighboring state tweets. Because they're like, we don't want that garbage. So pension issue, they're like, Illinois can stay in Illinois, thank you. And they're about to elect, I think, a Democratic governor who's going to make the situation worse, and this will end up costing taxpayers a ton of money because nobody will have the means outside of the federal authorities to bail out these states when the time comes, and it will be a bailout.
What is Yellen, Janet Yellen thinking when she says that the economy is growing and it's getting really strong? I don't think there's any real difference from what we were doing to what we are doing now. And I see signs going the opposite direction. What are they doing at the Federal Reserve?
I don't know. I want to drink what they're drinking. Can I have a portion, please?
I don't know if I want to drink any of that.
It's good stuff.
Look, I mean, the coincidence, if you will, is that the New York Federal Reserve tracks economic growth on a real-time basis. And because of the hurricane's impact on economic growth, because the auto industry is in an outright recession, they've had to take down their estimates for the remainder of the year. And it looks like the U.S. economy is going to grow at 1.8% for all of 2017, which is, oh, by the way, where it's grown for the past decade or so. We call that stagnancy. So I'm not sure where she's getting her information.
So tell me,
but you ask the average walking Joe, and they're not going to tell you that we're just booming and going.
So tell me about the auto, because you've been looking at auto loan default, because that's a huge bubble, as well as I think we're in another smaller housing bubble, and we're also in a bubble of college loans. But tell me about the autos, because I've seen recently that the number of autos that are sitting around waiting to be sold as the new ones are coming offline is quite dramatic.
Oh, absolutely. Look, Ford announced yesterday that it's going to be putting on hold 5 of its factories because it's sitting on too much inventory. You know, there was a lot of excitement, if you will, that there were going to be at least 500,000 cars destroyed because of these hurricanes, but car sales are already down 3% year over year. Even if you absorb a lot of that inventory that's sitting out there in order to replace the vehicles, which I think of that commercial on TV, they're probably going to get 3/4, if they're lucky, of the car's value. So it'll really help used car sales. But even if it was a whole 500,000 new cars, best case scenario, sales would still be down year over year, and production is still in a recession.
Danielle, thank you very much. Thanks for the warning.
Danielle DiMartino Booth, she runs a economic consulting firm called Money Strong. Also, you can get her on Twitter at DiMartino Booth or at DiMartinoBooth.com. And by the way, the summary of that was not good news. I just wanted, in case it was a little complicated.
All right.
The situation, not good news.
So it's weird. She's talking about the auto sales, and I'm looking for a new car. Think I'm going to buy a truck. I go out and try to buy a truck every 3 years, and then I end up buying something else. But I've been looking at it, and I'm walking on the car lot, and I'm like, why am I buying a new car? why would I buy a new car? Buy a used car. Why a new car? I mean, I guess I'm getting to that life, that point in life where I'm like, I've purchased so many cars and I've lost so much money over the years on buying new cars. My dad never had a new car. He couldn't afford one. The first new car he ever owned was the one I bought for him when I first made it. And I called him up and I said, because he was having car trouble, and I said, Dad, I want you to go out, you pick out a car that you want, and go buy it. And He's like, oh, son, I can't do that. And I'm like, no, you can, because I'll call the dealership, you pick it out, I'll buy the car for you.
I could use a new car.
Yeah, no. I mean, that was for my dad.
I can go to the dealership and pick one out and call you with the details.
No, that's okay. But it was, that's the first, and I didn't know this. You know, I just knew that we always had, but he had never owned a new car before. And that's because he couldn't afford it. And now I'm just like, this is stupid. Why would you drive it off the lot? But I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the cars and I'm thinking, in 5 years, the cars are going to be completely different. I mean, right now, you're looking at cars that, you know, they're not driving themselves. They don't have all of that technology. And in 5 years from now, what is a car going to look like? How is it going to be? Your car, if you own a Tesla, and once they get the self-driving thing done, your car is going to make money for you. You know what I mean? You're going to be able to say, hey, I just need you back here at 2 o'clock. Because I've got to go to a luncheon or a meeting or something like that. But you can work from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. and you go drive people around or whatever. I mean, that's the world that we're coming to, where your car is going to be an asset, not a liability. And
until everyone's car is doing the same thing and then there's no money to be made in it.
Well, people will buy fewer cars.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Because once you have access to cars that will just pick you up, and I mean, you don't get into cabs and stuff because usually the cab drivers, you know, they're not necessarily happy people.
at least when you get in.
Yes, when I get in, like, at least in New York, in the New York cab drivers are not necessarily the cleanest people, and not necessarily the happiest people. Uber has helped out. But even Uber driver, that's a thing of the past eventually. Uber drivers, it'll be somebody's car on hire.
I mean, I guess. It's certainly coming at some point. It's hard to imagine. It's really, we've gone so far so fast. You were talking about your car being, maybe this is the last car I buy.
Well, I said to you yesterday, we were in the hallway, and I said, this might be the last car that I, the last actual car, and this will be, you know, either this one or the next one, the actual last car that I buy, because they're going to change, and eventually, you know, cars will be so radically different that, you know, you'll walk into a garage and you'll see an old car and you'll be like, that's when a car was a car. That's a real engine. That's, you know, you had to drive it yourself, and your kids will be like, they let you drive? I mean, we're entering a period where that could happen in the next 10 years.
I was watching a documentary that by the year 2015, cars will all be flying, and there will be several time machines with flux capacitors going around.
So
you can buy books that predict sports events.
No,
that
wasn't a documentary. I will tell you that, have you seen the Model X Tesla, the SUV?
Yeah, it's nice.
It is Back to the Future. It has the DeLorean gullwing doors, and it is Back to the Future. I mean, it's a crazy car.
This is funny because I swear Elon Musk has like this 80s and 90s like pop culture sensibility. Like, I noticed that the volume for the speakers goes up to 11, a la Spinal Tap. And like, there are several things like in the car. I swear he's doing it because he's just a nerd. Ludicrous Speed from Spaceballs.
Oh, that's right.
It's like the guy just loves.
Let's get somebody on from Tesla and ask.
And ask them.
Yeah,
because
I bet you you're right. I bet you you're right. So how do you survive an event? How do you survive when the world has gone insane? You survive because you're prepared for them. You can't prepare for everything, but there are a few things that are constant across a crisis. If you look at what's happening in Mexico, holy cow. When are they going to go to work again? When will there be, you know, food in a neighborhood grocery store that you can have access to? How many days? Same with the hurricanes. You need an emergency food supply. Now, I happen to have a year's worth because I overprepare for everything because I think the world's headed for real trouble. But a 72-hour kit, everybody should have.
And in Puerto Rico, they're talking about no power on the island in a lot of places for 6 months. I mean, that is, you're not overprepared depending on where you are.
If you had My Patriot Supply, if you just did this one deal, 70 servings of survival food for $67. For $67, you have 70 meals. That is quite an amazing thing. And that takes you for a while.
That's like 90% of emergencies you can knock out with that package.
Call 800-977-0542 or order online at preparewithglenn.com. A prepared America is a strong America, and that is My Patriot Supply's mission. Prepare yourself. 800-977-0542 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So everybody's been focused on the UN this week and North Korea and what's going to happen with North Korea. I think we may have a way out.
Yeah, I mean, we know Kim Jong-un is doing all these nuclear tests and everything else, but he's doing something much worse, which is not paying his parking tickets in New York City.
Did you know that?
$156,000 in parking tickets North Korea apparently owes, reportedly. And
it's because if you have an ambassador plate, they can't tow your car away or anything. They just write you a ticket and it just stacks up and you just take it.
They say that 1,300 unpaid parking tickets from North Korea. Is there a negotiation that can go on with
that?
Yeah,
I'm wondering. You give up your nuclear weapons program and we're not going to sick the New York Traffic Authority on you.
Fair trade.
Glenn Beck.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, we want to welcome into Dallas and into our studios. The NRA's Women's Leadership Conference is happening. They're having their big event here in the Mercury Studios and having a big dinner tonight. And I'm speaking, and I don't know what I have to share of value, but I'm thrilled that they are here. And joining us in the studios all this afternoon and this evening. Also joining us in the studio is Mr. Pat Gray.
Stop the hammering! Can we stop the hammering? I don't care who you have to call the Queen of England, call the King of Siam. Stop the hammering! Where's the hammer? Where's the hammer? Who's hammering? Stop the hammering!
Now, if you don't know what Pat is talking about,
I'm talking about the hammering.
he's referring to a video that was released yesterday of Lawrence O'Donnell.
I can't get enough of it. I love it.
Because it was interesting that Glenn was pretty understanding of a host.
I noticed that.
Who would be upset?
Yeah. Come on, you would do exactly the same thing.
Take out my earpiece.
Well, you didn't see. No, that's not where the hammering was.
Well, that was the talking about Labor Day. There's two things that happened.
There's several things that happened.
Which would be understandable. You'd be annoyed at it.
You'd be irritated. You'd stop for a minute.
Oh.
It's a tape segment. Just stop and fix it. That's all you have to do. He just keeps trying to plow through the hammering and the thing in his earpiece and somebody talking about Labor Day specials.
So you are halfway through, more than halfway through, and you're going to stop and then pick up and do the whole piece again?
Yes.
No, you plow through it. You plow through
no,
it.
No, you don't. You would fix that. You would fix it.
You would call over the director,
and you'd say, where's this coming from? Can you find out where it's coming from?
No, I don't think so.
I think you would.
Pat.
I disagree completely.
Pat. And
I've seen you in those tense situations. Now, in 1992, you would have been,
Lawrence O'Donnell to the 99th power.
A lot more swearing.
But in 2017, you would stop down, I think, ask the director to come over and fix it. Can you fix this? I got something going on in my
I would have. Okay, so that I would have.
Yes.
However, if I'm on the air, now a tape piece is different, and I didn't know it was a tape piece. I thought it was live on the air. If I am on the air and somebody is hammering, you couldn't see me, or let me make it more personal, you couldn't see you saying, "What is the deal with the hammering?"
I thought this was an amazing hypothetical here.
Well, I mean,
Pat,
Stu and I have been down that road.
Oh, have we?
100 times on Pat and Stu.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when we did the show for multiple years, and I would say Glenn Beck, usually the one responsible for all the noise.
Because he's bringing in a tour group and talking over here like, "Oh, that's it. That's the chalkboard that I'm going to use later on." And we're
"That's the red phone from the Fox set."
Okay, we got it. We're on the air. We're doing a show right now on your channel.
As I pointed out to you earlier, Lawrence is doing a professional television show.
Yeah, I got it.
On an actual network.
Right.
I'm just saying, there is
sort
a difference.
Of. It's MSNBC, not
yes.
NBC.
Yes.
Sort
it's
of.
In the hammering was coming from downstairs where there were professional studios
yes.
and things going
yes.
on.
Which is why they weren't paying attention to his show going on upstairs.
They're like, downstairs, all the NBC chiefs are like, "That show's still on?"
I thought we fired all those people a long time ago.
Wait. You're telling me that news network, we didn't shut down.
The one with Microsoft at the beginning of it? That thing's still running? What? The Microsoft NBC channel is
Isn't
still on?
Isn't that incredible?
It
Isn't
is.
That incredible? It's MS is Microsoft.
Yeah, that's how it started.
You completely forget that.
Yeah.
It's not even anymore, right? I don't even think it's...
No.
I don't think so.
No, they got out of it.
In fact, they even separated the website now, right? It's just Microsoft has a website and MSNBC has a website.
Yeah.
They've separated that whole thing now. Because who'd want to be associated with them? No one.
No, not even the Carpenters Union. You notice that guy's like invisible. We don't know who that was with the hammer. He's like, "I am not identifying myself as being near that show."
There were more people watching carpenters do their carpentry than watch MSNBC. At least until the last few months. They've had some good ratings lately.
I will tell you that the Lawrence O'Donnell show, you know, sometimes it's like... I think God allows, you know, people say, if there is a God, how come he allows war? Because we need to learn geography.
You know what I mean? Otherwise, no one would know where Iraq is.
I don't know where Iraq is.
We had to attack it to find out.
North Korea. You know, like, I don't know. It's around that area. So it teaches you the same thing with the hammering. That hammering incident was just God's way of saying, Lawrence O'Donnell still exists.
Oh,
okay.
Okay, yeah.
That's right. So it's like, we're like, huh, that show is still on the air.
And
so,
actually, I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Honestly, didn't know it.
To be honest. Yeah, that's interesting. So before they end the world on the 23rd, we get to find out that Lawrence O'Donnell is still on the air.
Yes.
Both signs from God.
Yes. Sign of heaven. Stop the hammering.
Do we have the actual hammering sound, Sarah? Because I haven't actually.
Because I could not hear the hammering sound.
Oh, yes, you can. Then you heard an edited version.
Okay, yeah, probably.
It's like crazy.
Did you hear it too?
Pat, it would have made you, you would have lost your mind.
Yeah. Yeah,
let's listen
to it. Listen.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
That's really
good. Definitely. Definitely.
Okay, he's in an interview.
Yeah. I'd be mad.
Is Donald Trump going to be called to testify
to
Congress?
Asking
Michael Iskov has the
so
latest
he's in the
on
middle
that.
Of... Are you kidding me? You'd lose your mind.
Yeah, no.
You'd lose your mind.
It just shows you how inconsequential Lawrence O'Donnell's show is and MSNBC is. Doesn't it? Because how does a major television network allow that to happen in the middle of a show?
It is rare. However, these things do occur. Like, and it, you know, everyone gets pissed off at work from time to time. The idea that you're on camera winds up happening. It does happen. I've seen Glenn lose his mind before. We've probably all at some
Bill
point.
Riley, Bill famously, Riley, famously.
Yeah, and I don't know that I've ever lost my mind like Lawrence O'Donnell or I've ever seen Glenn lose his mind like that. However, you have your moments of real frustration and you're on camera.
Yeah.
However, what is interesting is usually those things only get leaked when the staff does not like you. I mean, so Lawrence, you wonder how many times this has happened with Lawrence O'Donnell, or if the people in the control room don't really like him that much.
And they're like, okay, let's send this one
really?
Out.
Really? Really, Mr. Jerkface? Uh-huh. Yeah, you're going to love this one. Because that's where it came from. That came from the control room. Somebody in the control room made a copy of that and then posted it.
Luckily, I've been taking money from the studios and just funneling it to the control room for months. So they like me a lot, even when I swear.
Oh, man, they are ripping me off twice because I'm doing the same thing. Pat, are you paying them too?
I don't have any money to do that.
Hey, can we give a real quick Jerry Jones before you leave? I want to play two clips. Do we have time, Sarah, to play two clips? I want to play the Jerry Jones clip, and I want to play the Little League clip. Yesterday, you talked about the Little League. The
taking
kids.
A knee.
Yeah, the kids, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids taking a knee.
Yeah.
Here is the coach of the Little League team.
One of the kids asked me, did I see them protesting and rioting in St. Louis? And I said, yes, I said, do you know why they're doing it? I felt like it was a good teaching moment for me to circle the team up and have a brief meeting. One of the kids asked, can we do that? Those are his words. And I said, as long as we know why we're doing it, I don't have a problem with kneeling. What I teach my kids is love, integrity, honesty, fairness, the respect, the ability of boundaries. As long as I have the support of my parents and my team, I'm perfectly fine. I'm covered under the First Amendment to peacefully protest and assemble.
Okay, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Man, thanks for throwing in the assembly part as well. I appreciate that. He's got two of the five, so we're good. Here's Jerry Jones, on the other hand.
We are once again seeing these players kneel on the field, not your team, but others. How do you feel about what you're seeing and the disrespect you're seeing towards the American flag right now?
Well, I do not think the place to express yourself in society is as we recognize the American flag.
Good for
and
you,
all
Jerry.
The people that have made this great country, the very opportunity for us to get be there in front of the nation. So that's not
like
the place
that.
To do anything other than honor the flag and everybody that's given up a little for it.
I know Stu doesn't like Jerry Jones, but
well,
a good statement from Jerry Jones.
Great I just don't Stu. Like his association with the Cowboys. Other than that, he's fine.
All right. Pat, we'll see you on Pat Gray Unleashed. Unchained, unshackled,
pretty much unbelievable.
Unbelievable. It's one of those.
At Pat Unleashed is the Twitter handle, so I'm pretty sure that's the name of the show.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. All right,
and it's coming up in moments.
All right, thanks. Someone's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. We had a fascinating interview with a guy today about how the government is now issuing subpoenas to be able to see what websites have you been on. They're telling internet providers that if you've gone on certain internet websites that the government doesn't like Disrupt J20, which I don't like at all. But this is really bad news, that they can go in and they can just find you and snoop on you. No, I don't think so. That's not identity theft. That's what the government is doing. Bad guys are stealing everything. LifeLock can detect a wide range of identity threats, and if there's a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but they can. They're the best at it. LifeLock.com. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code BECK. That's 10% off your LifeLock membership at LifeLock.com or 1-800-LIFELOCK.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
There's so much going on in the world that sometimes I'm overwhelmed and I don't even know where to begin. I try to find the stories that will make a difference, that actually matter And the only thing that really matters are those stories of people. I read a letter to the American people, and it was really a plea. But most people didn't read it, never heard it, didn't share it. I thought it was powerful. A story of a guy who could be just like you. When I stretched out my arms, I could touch the two opposite walls. The door was blocked with black garbage bags, leaving the room in total darkness. There was rotten, worm-infested food on the floor alongside scraps of clothing covered in feces. For a while, it felt as though I had been buried alive. It was a year before, while I was going to speak at a news conference, I was going to share my political thoughts when I was interrupted by 10 or 15 undercover secret police vehicles. A couple dozen armed agents came in and they tied my hands and covered my head with a black cloth. I was then locked in a cell without light or any kind of ventilation. I was denied any communication with the outside world, and I could speak with my lawyers only when I was taken to court. This went on for 10 days, and after then I was transferred to an administrative office inside the jail. It was there for the next 7 months. I slept on a mat on the floor. 3 months ago, the prosecutor in my case closed the investigation. He established that I wasn't guilty of any crimes. I had faced a trumped-up charge of possession of explosives. This meant that there are no active judicial proceedings against me. I'm just simply being held hostage in violation of the Constitution. Political imprisonment has been the punishment for daring to dream of a democratic society free of communism and open to the global community. We just want what so many other people around the world take for granted. Free elections, good governance, free expression, judicial independence, personal security, and a modicum of economic liberty. But an armed minority has managed to impose a regime of fear and corruption and blood. My case is evidence of that. I know I'm here for a just cause. My sacrifice and that of others like me will change millions of lives. Today, 93% of citizens in my country can't afford food. Because of food shortages that are the fault of our corrupt and brutal government, nearly three-quarters of our citizens say they have lost an average of about 17 pounds in the last few months. I don't want to think of a father's horror when his baby dies from a fever or something as simple as diarrhea that could have easily been treated if he just had access to simple medicine. I'm in prison, so this stops happening. That conviction gives me strength. My generation has made freedom its goal. I want to ask the people of the United States and the world to please stand by our side. I have finally been moved to a cell with a bed, though one with no windows. I can see the sun only an hour per week. I'm 32, and I've been a Democratic activist for 12 years. I have 2 children, 8 and 5, who are my sun and moon. I have a wife who I love and who now has to carry the burden of being married to a political prisoner. I write to you from my cell in the dungeons of the Venezuelan secret police. I will do everything in my power to keep resisting in prison. I'll keep dreaming of going home to sleep in a clean bed surrounded by my family. I'll keep dreaming of the day in which we all take to the streets to celebrate our freedom. These are the words of Jan Goicoechea. He wrote these words from his prison cell in Caracas, Venezuela, a vivid reminder that freedom is costly. And we are foolish when we take it for granted.
Glenn Beck.
You probably have heard by now how great Blue Apron is and how great the food is that you can get from Blue Apron. But you might think, I don't know, I don't want someone else picking my meals. I don't know. What if they give me something I don't want? You can customize your menu pretty much any way that you eat, whether it's a specific diet, whether it's a specific just things that you prefer. I mean, looking up into the future, they've got barbecue chicken turnovers. They've got spicy poblano and mushroom quesadillas, spicy chicken sandwiches, basil pesto spaghettini, whatever that is. It looks freaking delicious. I can tell you that by the picture. And I know that it's going to come out that way because I've made dozens of these things and they actually come out like the pictures. They actually taste as good as any food that you could possibly get at a restaurant. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free with free shipping. There's no risk here. By going to blueapron.com/stew, you'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. blueapron.com/stew. blueapron.com/stew. It's a better way to cook.